Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
We continue our exploration of the future of the Sierra Club.
Continuing our discussion with Greg Cassini, who is one of the board members with the National Sierra Club, who this last weekend was in San Francisco attending a very historic convention with over 4,000 members who came together to take a look at the Sierra Club and really determine where they needed to go now and how to get there, what they needed to do. And that's what I'd like to focus on now. We've talked about the process, which sounded very, very interesting, a process of self-discovery, identifying the message, and then crafting some new ways to approach things. The Sierra Club wants some new thinking. Well, let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts. What are the main concerns, therefore, of the Sierra Club based on this last week's conference in San Francisco?
One of the main concerns is how do we, in our communities, bring people together to take collective action? How do we reach beyond our membership? How do we seek new allies, build new coalitions? Because we know that most Americans care very deeply about the environment. They want clean water. They want clean air. They're really concerned that we're losing so much of the natural heritage that sustains and enriches our lives. So how do we individually and collectively as an organization bring community members together around our shared values and concerns? And most importantly, how do we act on those concerns? How do we take our concerns to those who represent us? And as a result of that concern, they actually prioritize a number of new initiatives, such as seeking new allies and building coalitions, advocating for solutions. That, I think, is a major concern of the Sierra Club members. They, I think, are tired of being put in the position where they have to constantly fight against bad proposals, or constantly say this level of arsenic in our water versus that level of arsenic in our water. We had some very inspirational speakers, such as Bill McDonough, who has shown us that you don't have to engage in a debate over how many parts per billion of arsenic you want in your water, that you can, as you know, the Creator intended, bring clean water. So another item on our agenda that was prioritized was advocating for solutions, real solutions, and taking that message out to people in our community to educate them that, you know, there is a better way, that we don't have to settle for the kinds of consequences we saw with poor planning from Hurricane Katrina, that we can protect our wetlands, that we can properly store toxic materials, that we can build cities that are livable, and that the commons and the function of government to protect the people is just so primary and so basic that we really need to be speaking out more about it. Not settling for a cleanup after the fact, but making sure that we build vibrant, healthy communities from the get-go.
It's pretty well recognized now that Americans all across the spectrum, red, blue, purple, and every other color, they want a clean environment, they want clean air, they want the forest, they want a healthy world. And they know what that means. The trouble is somehow it's been so politicized that it's hard to even know. It just gets so politicized, it gets complex. The media seemed to be a main theme in terms of a lot of the messaging going on, that was somehow we have to deal with the media. What can you tell us about that conversation and then how that will play into the future of accomplishing these wider missions for the Sierra Club?
Well, in the conversations we had this weekend, we talked about the need for the media to cover what's really happening out there, to hold local officials, state officials, federal officials accountable for their actions or their lack of action. We had many speakers, Vice President Gore, Robert Kennedy Jr., Arianna Huffington, they all talked about the need to hold officials accountable for their failures. It was really interesting that Mayor Gavin Newsom actually stood up in front of us and said, hold us accountable. as your local municipal officials, we can do a great deal to protect and serve the public. And it's not that hard. He went through a whole litany of things they've done in San Francisco. And he said, you know, it's not that hard to do it. We've done it. You just need to hold us accountable. And while we talk about the role of the media in bringing America's attention to the real problems and the real solutions, I think that more attention is actually focused on rolling up our sleeves, not relying on others, but rolling up our sleeves and getting out there in the communities and talking to people and working with people and creating the kinds of vibrant, healthy communities that we want to have. Because we realize that if we want to do it, the elected officials really are not the ones who are going to provide leadership. We're going to have to provide the leadership. And I think that was very evident in our direction-setting process because they prioritized bringing people together in local communities to take action together. They prioritized building coalitions, seeking allies. They did not focus on, while they talked about media, they did not focus on media. They focused on community action.
I guess my question would be, if without the media, doesn't that make community action more difficult? In other words, if the media were really, if we could figure out the way, and we're all working on that, to really get the media to tell the truth, which is one of the messages as well, to just keep telling the truth, that people are hungry for that, that would help the overall effort to bring this out to the people, because people aren't getting the truth.
There's no question that that is important. And in fact, Arianna Huffington made the point that we need to constantly go to the media, whether it is through letters to the editor or getting on camera, and keep our message out there. I'm a bit heartened by the response by reporters to Katrina, the humanness that people are now talking about. I hope that that isn't a passing fad. I hope that as a result of the kind of real human coverage we've seen, that they won't backslide when they're covering other issues, and that they will realize that there is a profound impact on the lives of people by the events that they cover, and they won't be afraid to cover them in ways that tell the real story and the underlying problems, and also they can play a tremendous role themselves in advocating for solutions. And I see no reason why someone who is sent to cover a story shouldn't point out when there's a better way to do things. It's just a responsibility of being an American.
I think part of the confusion comes from some sort of mixed up politics that suggests that in order to be a good American, you have to say good things about America, and that if you don't say good things about America, you're not truly a good American. And that that leads to the dilemma that those people who are bringing up problems that deserve to be discussed in the press are perceived as the enemy or un-American. And we really have to address that issue, because that's taken us down this path to such levels of confusion and really not a clear vision of what's happening on this planet and to the environment.
Oh, I agree completely with you. I frankly can't understand that attitude, that to say nothing when something is going wrong, in your opinion, is patriotic. I think those who stand up for what they believe in and constantly try to improve the nation are those true patriots. Now, we may disagree on what the best course of action is, but if you don't stand up and speak out, I don't think you're really contributing to the nation.
Speaking to that issue, actually, another huge area of concern right now, and also apparently part of the mission, is to address energy independence, and that that came out strongly at this particular event.
Well, actually, before I answer that, let me go back to the question you asked about some of the things that were different.
Sure.
As a result of the summit.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you were talking, I realized that one of the big differences I'm seeing, one of the big shifts, is that our members and activists are really not talking so much about the past and the problems. They're really focusing much more on solutions in the future. And I don't think it was the way we structured this convention. the conversations were, by and large, focused on our vision for America and the world moving forward. I spoke with a lot of people there. I listened in on a number of conversations at a number of tables, and I heard people talking about their visions and what they want to achieve. I didn't hear people talking about failures of the past. I didn't hear people really talking about problems. I heard many more conversations about solutions, and I think that was part of the excitement that I felt, that people really believed that we can have a brighter future. And I think that, getting back to your question about the new energy future, that is something that they embrace because they see how they can bring visionary solutions to the American people that can happen today. We really do have the technology to use energy far more efficiently. We have the technology to bring down the cost of renewable energy quickly. We have the technology to raise fuel efficiency standards and not use oil from the Arctic Refuge or the Persian Gulf. We have so many technologies that it really is just a matter of political will. Ellen, in fact, one of the very best lines by one of our keynote speakers was that political will is a renewable energy source. That got a great laugh, but, you know, there's a ring of truth to that. I think that this summit made people realize that together, 800,000, 750,000 members working in their communities with people who also want to embrace a better way. Everybody wants clean energy. Everybody wants clean water and clean air. Everybody wants their children to be free of asthma. Nobody wants to see another Hurricane Katrina. And I think that the new energy future really, to many activists that I've spoken with, was chosen because they know that it's achievable. They know that they, in their local communities, can work for solutions. I've been working in Colorado on our energy campaign. The people of Colorado passed a citizens' initiative to mandate increased use of renewable sources. They passed a citizens' initiative to build out light rail in the Denver-Boulder metro area. The people, I think, are quite ahead of many of the decision makers in the country. They're really providing the leadership. And I think our leaders at the summit recognize that America is just hungry for someone to provide vision and leadership. And this is one of those issues, energy, that affects a lot of the things that our members care about, whether it's keeping America's natural heritage protected, whether it's keeping the air clean, whether it's keeping the water clean. There are so many different issues that our activists work on that actually are affected by our energy policies that I really am not surprised that there was such strong agreement and commitment to that particular conservation approach.
Now, on a more complex issue, one that is in process, in other words, it's a problem that we're trying to identify and live with, and that would be global warming. How is the response, how is the Sierra Club looking at that enormous issue right now? They've tried so hard to get this more mainstreamed, and it's been a struggle. What is your plan to educate people and get them more aligned with the truth?
I think that the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina is educating people, because when you see people standing knee-deep in toxic water, you can't help but realize the value of clean water. When you see levees break, when you hear about the constant erosion of wetlands that protect the Gulf Coast, you can't help but understand the value of wetlands. So I think that the message is actually getting through. I think people understand that livable cities are just so key to protecting people from natural disasters, that good planning, common sense, understanding the forces of nature, it's just key to building a vibrant, healthy community. I think they understand that if we had listened and planned and prepared, that the toll for Hurricane Katrina would have been far less than it's going to be. both in terms of lives and in terms of dollars and in terms of the extensive environmental damage that's been caused throughout a three-state area.
I know that energy independence and global warming were two issues. Were there any that rose to that level in terms of this particular event?
Well, we looked at broad conservation approaches. We didn't look at specific individual issues. So, for example, under building a new energy future, we talked about energy independence, we talked about global warming, we talked about a number of things, but this was designed to do broad direction setting. Our national leaders and committees are going to be taking all this direction that the delegates have given us, and they'll be coming up with concrete proposals in terms of the short-term and medium-term conservation campaigns that we'll be putting together the rest of this year.
We're talking with Greg Cassini, board member with the Sierra Club, who attended the convention conference in San Francisco this last weekend, an historic event. Let's have a little bit of fun now, because, you know, the Sierra Club has a lot of members, 782,000 members or some number like that. And I know that when I go to a Sierra Club meeting, I see quite a diversity of people. There's a lot of gray hairs and blue heads and then every other color of the rainbow folks in the room. So you got some of the older folks who probably grew up in the old forms of the Sierra Club. How would you get them how could you help them to embrace and adapt to these changes and this new vision that perhaps younger members may take a little more easily?
Actually, I think they have adapted. I don't see a difference among age in terms of an emphasis on and building a new energy future. We actually did specifically recruit younger people to come to this event and to participate in our summit as delegates to this direction setting process. But in talking to Sierra Club activists, young and old, I didn't detect any difference in the level of support for building a new energy future.
That's fabulous. How would you therefore encourage, what would be if you had like three things that people should take away from this conversation that can help them prepare for the new strategies that will be proposed, what might you suggest?
Are you saying three strategies for Sierra Club activists?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And membership.
Well, I think they should think about their interests, their passion, their skills, and how they can be applied to the broader nationwide work of the Sierra Club. They don't necessarily have to fit into a campaign plan. Everybody, you know, has some skill, some talent that they can bring to the Sierra Club. Find out what you're passionate about, what your skills are, how you can contribute your work on behalf of the Sierra Club to improving the environment where you live. I'd also say, think about the ways in which your community can help to build a healthier, more vibrant future for itself. The Sierra Club is going to be moving to reach out to communities all across America to help them build a better future. What is the future that your community wants? How can the Sierra Club help support that better future? I would say that would be my second suggestion. Think about the needs of your community. Every community has a need for a brighter energy future. Every community has a need to prevent its citizens from pollution and toxics. And the third thing I would say, think about the power when there are hundreds of thousands of activists all across the country working toward a shared vision. Everybody wants to be part of something that's bigger than yourself. So to all those folks out there, I would say, come and be a part of something that together we can have much more impact on than if we just acted as 100,000 individuals.
Very good. In the future here, I hope to be able to have the actual audio from some of the addresses from Al Gore and Robert Kennedy Jr., for example, who I understand both of them literally brought people to tears and got people on their feet cheering.
Oh, they did.
Mm-hmm.
They were amazing.
Mm-hmm.
People have not even stopped talking about their speeches. Mm-hmm. They were so moving. I don't think I've ever seen Al Gore give a better speech.
He's getting better.
He is, and Kennedy was in fine form.
Mm-hmm.
He had every fact and figure at his fingertips, and he just went on and on and on. I don't think he even looked at his notes. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
and he was so moving, so inspirational. People were on their feet I don't know how many times.
It's fabulous. Well, hopefully I'll be able to get that and post that on the website here in the future here so that people can, I do believe there's something in the voice that is critical to really inspiring people to action. And that's why I like to refer to this as the voice of the earth. I bring the voices alive. Greg Cassini with the Sierra Club. Tell people who are either members now or who may have an interest in becoming a member and finding out more about the Sierra Club, what's the best way for them to do that?
I would recommend you go to our website, sierraclub.org, and look up your local chapter or group. We have organized activists in every state and practically every community in America. No matter where you live, there's probably an active group of Sierra Club members working in your community. So I suggest go to sierraclub.org, see what we're doing, then call up the leaders that you see and talk to them about your community, your interests, what they're doing, and come out, see what we're doing, meet us, talk to us, and be a part of it.
I think people will be excited about some of the new vision, some of the new positive thinking that is going to come out of the Sierra Club. This was a historic event, and Greg Cassini, I want to thank you so much for giving us this overview and insight into the success of this last week's events in San Francisco at the Sierra Club Conference. Thanks for joining us on the Wild Side News.
Thank you, Sydney. I appreciate the opportunity.
One final paragraph of advice is how Edward Abbey began the following advice to the activists. Do not burn yourselves out. Be as I am, a reluctant enthusiast, a part-time crusader, a half-hearted antic. Save the other half of yourselves and your lives for pleasure and adventure. It is not enough to fight for the land. It is even more important to enjoy it while you can, while it's still here. So get out there and hunt and fish and mess around with your friends, ramble out yonder and explore the forests, encounter the grizz, climb the mountain, bag the peaks, run the rivers, breathe deep of that yet sweet and lucid air. Sit quietly for a while and contemplate the precious stillness, that lovely, mysterious, and awesome space. Enjoy yourselves. Keep your brain in your head, and your head firmly attached to the body active and alive, and I promise you this much. I promise you one sweet victory over our enemies, over those desk-bound people with their hearts in a safe deposit box and their eyes hypnotized by desk calculators. I promise you this, you will outlive the bastards. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Thursday or any time on the archives, when once again your voice of the earth will ring out here on the Wild Side News.